you know, comparing Eric Metaxas to any other radio show host is a lot like comparing apples and, oh, I don't know, oranges, perhaps?
Yes, that's it. Precisely, oranges.
Ripe, luscious, supple oranges dripping with sticky, sweet juice.
Another day or two and they'll be rotten and inedible.
But today, oh, they're glorious and inviting.
Just like Eric.
And now, aren't you glad he's here? Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's named after me, the host, Eric Metaxas. And it's a show. This is the show. I apologize. This is all we have. I had to fire most of the crew. The dancers are getting, they're getting some kind of, I don't know, workers comp or whatever. But the point is, it's just us now. It's us. But here's the good news. I occasionally have on spectacular guests. For example, right now, Mr. Lou Dobbs. Lou Dobbs, welcome to this program.
Thank you, Eric. And I always wondered where the show got its name, and now I've solved that mystery.
Well, the fact of the matter is, the name Eric Metaxas Show was not taken, so I changed my name and we grabbed it. You know how that goes.
I do.
You are well known to probably most of the folks who listen to this show or watch it on YouTube. You've been in this business a long time. I didn't know that you graduated from Harvard. I graduated from Yale. I suspect that it probably meant something back when you were there. But we know now that the cultural elites, whether it's New York Times or CNN or the folks at Yale and Harvard, have abdicated whatever sense they had of the founders' vision of America, and it's why Donald Trump got elected and by God's grace will be reelected. You have a book coming out in a couple of weeks called The Trump Century. People can pre-order that right away. I'd love to talk to you since this is airing today. What is your sense of where we are right now in this country?
We are in crisis and we are nearing extremists in that crisis. I truly believe the president's right now, his leadership is critical. It will be decisive in terms of the direction that we take, because anything that he does now that is a misstep, and I'm talking about as he makes decisions about the profound issues, the direction of the country, the protection of the American people, is going to resonate for decades. If we give way to those who in the left wing, who would rule by mob, rule by disinformation campaign, we're lost. And the left is doing precisely that now and much, much more. It's easy for everyone to forget we've gone through 4 years of a campaign against this president by our own intelligence agencies to first block his candidacy from in 2015 and 16. Then to block the transition, then to block his taking office, and then to overthrow him. That's what he's gone through for 4.5 years. It's stunning stuff.
Well, unfortunately, I'm well familiar with every detail of what you're talking about, and it's horrific. To me, it seems like an existential crisis along the lines of the Civil War or the Revolution, where you have such fundamental differences that if we who elected this president don't reelect him because of all that it means, that America as we know it effectively ceases to exist. Biden's view of America, or whoever will be governing in lieu of the husk that is called Joe Biden, their view of America is antithetical to America.
No question about it. And the radical Dems, the Democrat Party, is campaigning. I never thought I would see such a day, but one of the two major political parties are campaigning against this very nation, against America, and they're campaigning against Americans. And they mean, by the way, to destroy everything that is associated with our heritage, our history, and our culture. And that effort is full-throated and underway in almost every quarter of the country right now.
Well, what is it then that you see? I mean, you have been more fulsome in your praise of this president than others I would have expected to be. What do you suppose it is that he has done, because he does seem to me like a man created by God for this hour. It's a kind of an extraordinary thing to watch. So what are some of the things that he's done? I know in your book, which is coming out soon, The Trump Century, you talk about him changing the course of history forever. I think that's exactly correct. So let's talk about that.
The first thing he did, Eric, was to stop the decline in the denial of America. And it didn't take him long. As soon as he asserted himself in the White House, as soon as he openly changed the rhetoric of the public conversation, suddenly, and it almost without notice by the left-wing media until it was much too late, he inserted God back into the public square. He did so with tremendous, I think, deft stealth. And I'm talking, yes, about this president being stealthy. He was remarkable. And we saw it ring out in communities all over the country. It's one of the least appreciated accomplishments of this president. Not only is he preserving faith in this country, but he was putting faith and God on the public agenda and on the tongues of even the those who would seek to remove God again from the public square. It's really been an astonishing accomplishment. And along with that, his support for law and order, his support for the assertion of sovereignty in this country, as he said from the beginning, without borders, there is no nation. And without enforcement of those laws, there is no nation. And it is, he has asserted that support for law enforcement in ways that matter, moving equipment to the communities and cities that need it, making certain that they do have support, irrespective of their local, state, or county governments. Watch what's happening in Illinois, Portland, Oregon, Kenosha, Wisconsin. It's really remarkable what he is doing to have an emphatic and real, concrete impact. And then we get to the more esoteric things like jobs and the economy and foreign policy, in which he has asserted the United States in ways unthinkable since the days of George H.W. Bush. I had great arguments with that president, but I had them as well with Reagan. This one I have very few arguments. I think he's just doing a remarkable, remarkable job.
It's a funny thing, isn't it, that Trump is so bold that he makes previous Republican presidents look weak. It's very odd to me that anybody could have come into our history and have done that, but he really has done that. And he's driven some of them insane. Obviously, the late John McCain and Mitt Romney, and he seems to have driven them over the edge and exposed them for something less than genuine American loving conservatives.
Right, as if they ever were. There wouldn't have been a pretense on their part had it not been for the left-wing media. Trying to put, for example, John McCain on the air on almost every Sunday talk show host every year, because he would be the first to rebut, rebuke, and rebel against the Republican Party and conservatives. And so they held him up as their fair and balanced caricature that they would put up on those Sunday talk shows to denigrate the Republican Party and God-fearing, law-abiding citizens.
Well, when you have people like John Kasich, my goodness, a former GOP candidate for the presidency going over to their side, and if their side were the Joe Biden of 20 years ago, that would be bad enough. But when their side is effectively the party of AOC and Ilhan Omar and the rest, a kind of madness has overtaken the left that surely we haven't seen in our lifetimes. It was... We get a taste of it in 1968, but this is madness. We're going to go to break, folks. I'm talking to Lou Dobbs. I know you're not going anyplace. Right before my very eyes. Hey, folks, this is the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Lou Dobbs, the legend, the man. Lou, you're not quite old enough to be a legend, but I think of you as a legend because you've been on the air for quite a while in the business world. But on your show now, you talk about this president a lot and you're a fierce defender of his. One of the things that I see happening, and I just want to get your reaction, is that it is because he's so bold that he's driven the other side insane. In other words, if you play patty cake with the devil, with evil, with the left, they kind of leave you alone. They still demonize you as they did Reagan and Bush. But this president, it's like he has taken a stick and just shoved it into the hornet's nest and doesn't care. And he's driven them mad because they're not used to that and they don't seem to be able to deal with it.
And he's taken away their stingers as well, Eric. He is, and set a fire in the nest. This is a president who has demonstrated without question that the left is a fraud on those who depend so much on the Democrat Party. And I'm talking about inner city minorities. I'm talking about low income citizens who have always been the subject of the coalition, if not the part of the coalition. And by that, I mean, how is it that we spend $22 trillion over the course of the last 50 years and we still have these poverty levels in our inner cities? We still have these gaps in education and income amongst minorities and white populations. It's outrageous. And this is happening with black leadership in these cities that we're watching, and many of them burning, riots unfolding every night. These are left-wing run cities, often black run cities and police departments. And it is an experiment that is not working for minorities. And they know that. That's why the president in the most recent poll is looking at 26% approval among African Americans. You ask Jesse Jackson, I can guarantee you that Jesse never dreamed he would see the day that a conservative, populist Republican was garnering 26% support in the African-American community.
Well, I think it's kind of like with the sexual revolution. At some point, you have enough time and enough data that you can look at it and say, hey, guess what? This has hurt a lot of people. And I think that, you know, you could make the case for the big welfare state some years ago. But at this point, it's obvious that it has dramatically hurt blacks in America. It's just, it's obvious. And I think that many blacks are speaking out about it. I've had so many of them on this program because they say enough is enough. And I think that the Democrats are seriously frightened at the prospect of being exposed for, as you said, the frauds or at least the failures that they have been.
And Joe Biden demonstrates that fear and that reluctance to go into the sunlight, remaining in his basement, you know, throughout. He actually said he intends to campaign from that basement.
Did you know, I don't want to interrupt you, but did you know that he sleeps in a coffin?
No, I didn't, but I'm not entirely surprised. Yeah. Is that the man is... I don't know what's going on because he is clearly impaired. The national left-wing media knows it. They will not discuss it. And the president the other day, I thought, did something brilliant. Before every debate, he wants to see a drug test of Joe Biden because he did make some miraculous, what would you call them, recoveries during the primary debates. And it does look peculiar. This man who can't seem to get through an appearance without major, they like to call them gaffes. They're just complete confusion moments.
Who is his Dr. Feelgood? We want to know. It kind of is amazing, though, in all seriousness, that the party would put forward someone like this. I mean, it's a Potemkin village. We've never seen anything like it in our lives. The idea that someone who we know will not govern is the candidate. I mean, there's a level of cynicism that goes along with that, it's breathtaking.
And I think you hit upon it earlier, because the Democratic Party right now is desperate. They know they're in significant trouble. This is a president who is cleaving their core constituencies because he is demonstrating, not addressing rhetorically, the issues that are most important to them. Jobs, the economy, education. And by the way, he wants to treat them with dignity and respect. Think about the campaign he had to reach out to African Americans in this country, Eric. He said this in the campaign, and this was basically it. What have you got to lose? That was his main message. What have you got to lose? And then he built and led an economy that resulted in the lowest unemployment rate in this country's history for African Americans. It doesn't get much better than that.
Well, as I say, it's a kind of madness that has descended on the left. I never thought I'd see anything quite like it. I've always had friends on the Democratic side, and we disagree, but things are now scorched earth. If you don't agree with them, you are a racist, you're a white nationalist. I've been accused of that. I've written entire books in which it's obvious how I feel about racism or Adolf Hitler, you know, big history books. And the fact of the matter is that people don't seem to be willing to have a real conversation. I think it's because they're afraid of the conversation. They sense that they will lose. And so this is effectively all they have in their desperation.
And that reluctance extends to conservatives as well, as you know. 77% of conservatives say that they are reluctant, if not outright fearful, and refuse to discuss who they'll vote for in the upcoming election because of the social stigma that attaches to them, the perceived stigma, the arguments that they will be in, and the threats and challenges that they receive. So when you add that kind of reticence to the silent majority of the forgotten man and woman in this country, I think that there has to be an algorithm for every poll that should reflect that. And the reality is this president has so much intense, enthusiastic support among his base, which, by the way, everyone needs to fully understand, extends to not only working men and women and their families and small business, but to independents, and yes, some, they're not many, but some moderate Democrats. And that'll be reflected on November 3rd in ways that I believe that most Americans will be shocked.
Well, I certainly hope so. I really do think that the level of speed at which the left has gone to the radical left, it's something that only Trump could have driven them to it, because they've been hiding behind some kind of moderation for a long, long time. So to come out in the open and use terms like socialism and obviously defunding the police, I mean, that level of madness, only Trump, I think, could have driven them to say those things and do those things.
He either drove them. I think that the party with Bernie Sanders was pretty well on its way in that direction. Nonetheless, it's the logical, as Obama liked to say, it is the natural arc of of this pitiful party of hate to move all the way to the left, all the way to socialism and whatever it then brings. I truly believe that we are looking at a relatively small number of Americans in this country, after all is said and done, who really believe in socialism, who really believe in what Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Hillary Clinton are selling. I really doubt that they're prepared to go to that level. The national left-wing media wants to project them as being those folks. It also wants to suggest that another couple of Democrat-led programs will be the solution to all that ails us. This president has already proved that without a programmatic response, just with leadership and a positive sense of this country's destiny, that you can get to 3.5% unemployment quite quickly and quite powerfully. And I think that that's got a lot of people thinking on the Democrat side of the equation.
Well, he simply unleashed the free market. I mean, it's not exactly rocket science, right? You deregulate, you lower taxes. It's people want to make money, and it works, and they do, and jobs are created, and we've seen it time and again, and this is just the most recent dramatic example of it. We're going to be out of time for this segment. Folks, I'm talking to Lou Dobbs. He has a book coming out, The Trump Century, How Our President Changed the Course of History Forever. I think you probably want to pre-order a copy. Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Lou Dobbs, and I got to tell you, Lou, when I'm talking to you, the first thing I think about is that you were with CNN. Did you ever dream that CNN and the New York Times would do what they've done, which is effectively utterly abdicate any kind of sense of fair journalism and become advocacy journalists, if there is such a thing?
Yeah, I think I had a strong sense of it, certainly at CNN, because I was suddenly at one man amongst the herd of liberals in CNN. I knew that that kind of conflict and contest couldn't go on much longer. But the New York Times, it was what it's been. It's a left-wing journalism. But what surprised me is the commitment of the Washington Post, with Jeff Bezos taking over. I mean, it is a full-on propaganda operation attacking this president 24/7, as is the New York Times. I'm not suggesting otherwise, or CNN or MSNBC. They're all doing it. But the Post once had a standard that was, I think, reasonable, at least. Not always fair, not always balanced, but reasonable. That's gone entirely.
I wonder what Sally Quinn has to say about this. I mean, I just can't imagine how far these papers have gone and CNN has gone. I want to talk to you about China just because, sure. You know, speaking as a person of faith, not everybody listening to this program is a person of faith, but I think that if you're an American, you understand that our free market, just as our democracy, is based on virtue. In other words, the free market is amoral. It'll give you better drugs, better pornography. It'll give you whatever you want. And if we handle it rightly, and it can just create wealth unbelievable. Then there's China. And we have had a number of presidents not see or not have the courage, more likely, to stand up to China. And to pretend in a way that morality doesn't come into it, that if you're using slave labor, we don't care. Somebody else who used slave labor, we might as well profit off of it. I'm astounded that this president has had the courage to stand up to China.
I've watched this man and his statements over the years, so I was not surprised at all. And what surprised me is the degree to which he has fulfilled his promises. Standing up to China was one of the most courageous acts of, you have to go back, in my opinion, to Lincoln to find a president of his historic weight and gravitas and importance. I really believe he is that historic because he stopped cold the idea that a very simple economic principle, that it was not a zero-sum game, international trade. You could let the other trading partners take 0.4% off GDP every year, not a problem. And then suddenly people started looking around after this president said, free trade, it's costing us trillions. And he's right. And it did. And it would have continued until we were an abject debtor nation in perpetuity were it not for Donald Trump. And to stand up against China took great guts because China, as you know, is a formidable competitor. They're more than that. They are our enemy in a Cold War that is only intensifying.
Well, I mean, there's so many issues when you're talking about China. First of all, when you cease to teach civics in America and you cease to teach what is American virtue and American exceptionalism, you get people like the head of the NBA or the head of some NBA teams who don't really seem to care about anything other than the bottom line. They don't care about being an American company, standing up for American values. They would sell their soul to the devil or to the Chinese if they thought that they could increase their bottom line. They don't seem to be loyal to America. They don't seem to care whether America or China comes ahead. That to me is unprecedented. At least I can't think of anything in our past where you had American corporations that cowardly and that sold out to their own bottom line and self-interests.
Not in such a universal manner as they have. You said they seem to be, they are. They are betraying the United States and their responsibilities, their obligations to this country. We're talking about whether it be the NBA, the NFL. And they're doing so, I believe, Eric, as a matter of rationalization. All of this on the left, this hatred of who we are, what we've been, where we've come, is a rationalization for their conduct now, economically and financially. Because we built China. China didn't build China. We built China, to paraphrase Barack Obama. It was our ignorance and our just indolence that permitted them to get into the WTO. They had preferred nation status. They're considered a third world country under the WTO and are not obligated to be reasonable or reciprocal until this president came along. And if he hadn't called it now, it would have been too late, I believe, 5 years from now, without question.
I think that that's right. And that's what's so horrific to me. The way I see it, and I think that this is probably the only way to see it, unless somebody can help me. But I mean, on the right, you have people that idolized the free market, that they weren't understanding that if you have a free market, it doesn't automatically lead to people wearing tricorn hats and carrying muskets and you know, behaving like Paul Revere and the founders, that the free market's a little bit more complicated than that. And on the left, a naivete toward evil, toward communism. We're going to a break. We'll be right back talking to Lou Dobbs. New book coming out, The Trump Century. Hey there, folks. I have the fun of having a conversation with Lou Dobbs. He's got a new book coming out. It's called The Trump Century. I think you want to pre-order a copy, or why not just order a copy? I don't know. Lou, I want to ask you, we were just talking about China, the rise of China. And when I saw the Clintons and many on the right seem to act as though nothing bad can come of this, that everything that would come out of the free market would lead to goodness, that it wouldn't empower China to further oppress its citizens. That could never happen because the free market only leads to freedom. It seems a naive view of the power of the market, in the same way that George Bush had a naive view that if the people in Iraq only vote, we'll see a few purple fingers and voila, they'll be just like America. Ordered freedom on the American model is much more complicated, but it's depressing to think that our leaders could be that naive about it, and as a result of their naivete and greed, allow China to become what it's become.
The conjunction with naivete and greed, unfortunately, is perfectly apt, particularly in the case of Iraq. The idea that suddenly we would turn a country that had lived through decades of despots and barbaric rule would suddenly be thankful to the American military that overwhelmed them in a matter of, 3 days, is really a bit of a stretch for even the most devout believer of free markets and free enterprise. I'm one of those people. I'm a free enterprise, free market guy, except I am also one who understands history and I understand economics. And the reality is that there must be constraints on both. Protection for the consumer. There has to be protection for the markets. We have the most secure markets in the world. we don't have the most secure markets in the world, whether in equities or derivatives or bonds, because the good old free market just takes care of everything with each sunrise. No, because we have the best policed and watched markets in the world. We regulate them wisely and stay as far away from that those animal spirits as we can. But we do not let animal spirits rage, and nor should we, whether it be in international trade, whether it be in those markets, whatever it may be. It's free enterprise, but it is not a place for irresponsible philosophies that require nothing on the part of the citizen or its or their government to watch over it.
Well, I mean, exactly. And I think that that's why people have to really understand what is ordered liberty. What is the free market? How does it work? And the idea that it just works by itself and does these things. So many people seem to have believed that. And
Eric, let me use the ugly L word. Libertarianism is a philosophy that is very popular amongst conservatives, but it is basically, again, a rationalization rather than a philosophy, because it eschews responsibility, it eschews obligation, and requires that you just simply dismiss that real world that exists out there, which is often a mean place, a bad place, unless you make it a good place and a peaceful place.
And again, I mean, the founders understood this. This their genius of understanding that we have to have checks and balances. I mean, it's pretty basic, right? And federalism is a good idea, not to have a gigantic government. And I mean,
what a wonderful idea.
What's that?
I said, what a wonderful idea.
I mean, but it's kind of funny because these ideas have not been taught for about 50 years. When you don't teach those ideas, you get a bunch of young people who think socialism might work.
They invented it.
Pardon?
They think they invented it, like so much. Communism is not new. There's no place called Cuba 90 miles off our shores that is a leading evidence of a thought experiment gone utterly mad. It's worth taking note of that as well. The people in this country who, well, seem to think that these are natural cycles, I think you hit upon it again. There is a generational gap here, partly our responsibility and our fault in my generation, because our public schools aren't teaching as they should. We have teaching led by unions which are, frankly, at one time a terrific counterbalance to corporate power in this country, have become something unto themselves. They're part of this sort of fifth column that has grown up in the national left-wing media, left-wing labor unions, and the list goes on, operating as if there is some higher purpose than obligation or duty to the country.
Do you think that this president, via Betsy DeVos, will be able to have any effect against these teachers' unions? I mean, or are they just intractably in place?
I think it's very discouraging for me, Eric, to look at what has happened during the China virus pandemic, because this was an opportunity for local school boards to step up and say, this is the way it's going to be. You're going to teach. You're going to take care of your responsibilities to teach our young people, because they can't afford to have a year of their lives ripped away in learning. To me, it's just horrible. City governments just sort of said, they abdicated. They said, well, you people, you professionals, you scientists, as if teaching is, you know, high science. They teach science, but the teaching isn't science. And it is a civic responsibility. And we have to be better as Americans than this. Stand up, understand what's going on. We now know that the numbers the CDC have been putting out and the way in which they've been putting out those numbers on mortality, on transmission, have been at fault all along. They, our scientists, and some of our leading public health doctors have been just utterly wrong. It's inconvenient to the left narrative, I understand, but those are the facts, and we need to deal with them and fix them.
Can I keep you for another 4 minutes? Would that be okay, Lou?
Sure, whatever you need.
Okay, well, I just want to say, first of all, the new book coming out soon is called The Trump Century, How Our President Changed the Course of History Forever. Lou, part of what you do on your program, watched by so many people, is at the very heart of our democracy, to communicate these ideas. I think fundamentally it is a media problem that we have in America, that a lot of people simply aren't hearing the kinds of things that you're talking about. We'll be right back, folks. Final segment with Lou Dobbs. Lou, we've just got a few minutes left. You've commented a lot on what's been happening over the last 4 years with regard to the so-called deep state and this coup against this president. It's unprecedented. There's no question. It really does make Watergate look like a joke. Do you have any sense that there will be any accountability beyond what we've seen? I mean, I know this question has been asked 50 times a day on TV, but I keep wondering.
I keep wondering right along with you, and I'm sure millions of Americans as well. I wish I could say I knew, had a strong sense. I talked with the president just a few days ago. I don't get the sense that, well, I shouldn't tell you what I get the sense or don't get the sense. I don't see a lot of joy in the swamp about the prospects that it'll be drained right away. That's basically the sense I get. Durham may surprise us, Barr may surprise us, but right now I'd say the deep state is ahead on points and not off its game. When we are only talking to John Brennan at the end of an investigation rather than at the beginning, it troubles me deeply. I think that the corruption, the awful, pervasive political corruption in our Justice Department and our FBI, I think under Attorney General Barr understands he's got to rip it up. I just think he has so much of it to do and so little help. It's a daunting task. I pray for him. I hope everybody else is, because we really do need it to be successful. But that's the best I can do for you on that, Eric.
I also wonder about, we mentioned before, Betsy DeVos. I mean, with regard to school choice, if we have school choice in America, you know, it's effectively game over for the teachers' unions, which is why they're fighting as they are. These are some kind of foundational things that in a second term, I would hope this president will get to deal with these things.
I do too. And it's critical that I happen to be a product of public education. It's the great equalizer in our society. Take away everything else that we know. If we are teaching our children, and if they are going to church, if they are learning their faith, you know, we can get a lot done just with public schools and faith communities teaching their children. I really believe that. The rest of it, we can make up for. That we can.
Well, that's the thing. And obviously, kids are being propagandized in most of these public schools. And I really think it's at the heart of our problems, because these foundational things must be taught. I mean, all of the founders, the title of my book on the subject, If You Can Keep It, when Franklin said, if you can keep it, he meant, if you can keep it. If you do the things necessary, it will be possible to stay free. But if you don't do those things, the government can't coerce you to be free. I mean, it's a pretty basic thing, and schooling is a big part of that. Lou, I'm sorry we're out of time. Is there a website where people can find you?
You know, absolutely. LouDobbs.com, at Lou Dobbs on Twitter, you name it. I'm accessible.
You're all over. Well, listen, it's just a great joy to get this time with you. Congratulations on the book, The Trump Century. I hope it does very, very well. Wonderful to have you.
Well, it's great to be with you, Eric. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Hey, folks, if you're like me, you are looking for films that have biblical values and that are family films, and you can't find them very easily. Well, I'd like to suggest that you go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com, particularly right now, they have a film called One Nation Under God. It tells the story
of a student who goes to a prestigious magnet school and finds out that the principal has issued an edict, no one can mention God in the school. Well, a few weeks later, a senator and presidential candidate comes to the school to speak, and David Gutierrez asks him a question. He says, if our founding fathers placed God at the center of our nation, which of course they did, shouldn't God be a part of our schools and government today? The senator, no surprise, is caught off guard, and what he says sets off a frenzy of national press coverage. So see how the courage of one student standing for his conviction can inspire others. Watch One Nation Under God at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com. Use the code ERIC for 20% off.